The helicopter's radio crackled to life, giving Rayford time to silently pray that God would keep him from saying something stupid. He still didn't know whether Amanda was dead or alive. He didn't know whether Chloe or Buck or Tsion were still on Earth or in heaven. Finding them, reuniting with them, was his top priority. The dispatcher at the shelter requested Max 1020.
"Still working rescue at Baghdad," he said. "Be at least another hour."
"Roger that." Rayford looked uncertainly into Max's eyes, dimly illuminated by the glow from the control panel. There was no turning back now. "Mac, I'm going to tell you my whole story, and everything I feel about what's happened, about Nikolai, and about what is to come. But before I do, I need you to tell me what Carpathia knows about Hattie and Amanda." Mac sighed and looked away.
"Well, Ray, the truth is Carpathia knows Hattie is still in the States. She got as far as Boston, but his sources tell him she boarded a nonstop to Denver before the earthquake hit. That's where her family is. Nobody knows why she went back."
Rayford's voice caught in his throat. "And Amanda?"
"Carpathia's people tell him she was on a PanCon heavy out of Boston that should have been on the ground in Baghdad before the quake hit. It had lost a little time over the Atlantic for some reason, but the last he knew, it was in Iraqi airspace."
"There's still hope, then," Rayford said. "Maybe that pilot was far enough behind schedule that he was still in the air and just stayed there until everything stopped moving and he could find a spot to put down."
"Maybe," Max said, but Rayford detected flatness in his voice.
"I won't stop looking until I know." Mac nodded, and Rayford sensed something more.
"Mac, what are you not telling me? This is worse than her being dead."
"Cameron, if you do not find Chloe's car, will you conclude that she somehow escaped?"
"That's my hope."
"So as soon as we have established that her car is not here, let us try to salvage whatever we can from the house."
"Like what?"
"Foodstuffs. Your clothes."
"Good idea," Buck said.
He pulled his cellular phone from his pocket. It showed full power and full range.
"I wonder if enough towers are still up to allow us to call anywhere."
"We better get heading back soon," Max said.
"Oh, sure," Rayford said. "I'm going to let you take me back to Carpathia and his safe shelter before you tell me something about my own wife that I'll hate worse than knowing she's dead."
"Ray, please don't make me say any more. I said too much already. I can't corroborate any of this stuff, and I don't trust Carpathia."
"Just tell me," Rayford said. Mac took a breath, but maddeningly said nothing. Rayford was about to explode.
"I gotta get out of this cockpit," Mac said finally, unbuckling himself.
Mac was out of his seat, bending low to keep from knocking his head on the ceiling of the plexiglass bubble. He popped the door open, jumping down into the sand. Rayford followed. Mac stood there, hands thrust deep into his pants pockets. Light from the full moon highlighted the reddish-blonde hair, the craggy features, and the freckles on his weathered face. He looked like a man on his way to the gallows. Finally, he turned to face Rayford.
"All right, here it is. Carpathia talks about Amanda like he knows her."
Rayford grimaced and held his hands out, palms up. He shrugged. "He does know her, so what?"
"No, I mean he talks about her as if he really knows her."
"What's that supposed to mean? An affair? I know better than that."
"No, Ray, I'm saying he talks about her as if he's known her since before she knew you. Behind closed doors, Carpathia makes comments about Amanda. She's a team player, he says. She's in the right place. She plays her role well, that kind of stuff." "Well, what am I supposed to make of that?"